Well, we did mention today that we are going to have a big guest coming up, and we mentioned it a little, maybe about an hour before. It is the chief executive of our province of Alberta, Mr. Jason Kenney. Premier, welcome. Great to hear your voice again.
Great to be back. Thanks so much, Kenny.
All right, so I guess the first question is, Premier, is that obviously one thing we see in this budget is a huge focus on rural Alberta, especially here in the rural Northwest. And I know a lot of people up here in the past from previous governments have felt ignored if you weren't like a certain distance above Grand Prairie. So talk about how important it is to have strong, vibrant rural northern communities thriving if Alberta is going to bounce back.
Well, absolutely. You know, the Northwest has been one of the bright lights in the tough Alberta economy in the past 5 years. Not to say that it's all been rosy up there. There's certainly been some big challenges. And obviously, going back 5 years ago to the 2015 price crash, as you know, a couple of major projects were pulled out of the Peace River area. But still, what you guys have got up there is a pretty diversified, resource-based economy. We have the strongest year in the history of forestry, and that's a major industry in the Northwest. Agriculture, although you had some bad weather in parts of the region, overall, Alberta had our third highest ever farm yields last year, and we are now, our farmers are now enjoying almost record high prices. So they're doing quite well, generally speaking. And, you know, the energy prices are recovering, which is, which means, you know, it'll take a while because the oil and gas companies have to address the damage done to their balance sheets last year with the global price collapse. But once that's done, we're going to see a significant increase in capital spending, which means good blue-collar jobs in the oil field service sector, the drilling rigs, and so forth, including in the Peace. And a lot of other good things happening in terms of diversification. But, you know, we wanted to take this crisis and do everything we could to stimulate growth. And, you know, that part of that is the largest ever capital investment budget in the Alberta history, $21 billion over 3 years. We estimate it'll create 90,000 jobs province-wide. And the Peace Country is benefiting from a lot of those projects. Obviously, last year we finished the new bridge in the town of Peace River. And there's been significant investments made in expanding or renewing hospitals, schools, highways, and roads. Some of the features in this budget include a new school up in Nanning. They've been waiting for a long time. A new school up in Fort Vermilion because they got wrecked with the floods last spring. A small healthcare unit, I won't quite call it a hospital, but a healthcare center focused on maternity birth support for moms in the Lacrete area. They're having like 400 babies a year up in that small town, and they're driving 90 minutes to get. Half the babies are being born on the highway on the way to high level. So that's happening, as well as the of course the Paddle Prairie Peace River bridge, and we're very excited about that because it's going to be our first ever user paid bridge, and it's a partnership between industry and the government. We couldn't get it done otherwise, and there's a lot of other projects up there that I know Dan Williams has filled you in on. We really believe the Peace is going to lead Alberta, and that Alberta is going to lead the country in growth. And this past week, the Conference Board of Canada, a big think tank, and the Bank of Montreal have both projected that Alberta will lead Canada in economic growth at about 6.5% GDP growth. Today, we got a good jobs report out of StatsCan for the month of February, showing Alberta leading employment growth again at 18,000 new jobs, 85% of them full-time jobs. That's on top of 20,000 last month. I know times are still tough. I'm not trying to deny that, but I'm optimistic, and I'm optimistic for the Peace Country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, one of the things maybe we'll get, maybe a little inside information if you could give us, and that is two of our representatives up here, and we know that MLA Williams and MLA Todd Lowen are regular advocates because quite a few things have gotten done in here over the last few years. How often would you say in caucus or cabinet are MLAs Williams and Lowen bending your ear saying, hey, our communities need this, our communities need that?
Well, all the time. Todd, both of them are very strong advocates for rural life generally. I mean, obviously they've got to defend their ridings, but there's a broader purpose behind it, which is the sustainability of our smaller communities. And Todd's been up in the legislature two or three times this week, pointing out that yes, it is often a little more expensive to deliver services in more remote areas because, you know, for obvious reasons, you're serving fewer people. and there's less often, you know, it's just more expensive to service things than in the big cities. But the point he's making is that's an obligation we have, and that so much of our wealth gets extracted, so many tax dollars, so many jobs come out of remote regions like the Northwest. So that and that if we don't invest in services, then we'll continue to see population decline, which becomes a vicious cycle. So I think both of them make a compelling case about this. And I got to tell you, they're pushing on an open door when it comes to me in the finance industry. You know, Travis is from Rio Grande, which is hardly shows up on the map. And he's from a second generation Peace Country Alberta ranch family. And then, you know, I myself grew up in a little village in rural Saskatchewan, a population of 250. And
sounds like Wilcox.
That's it. And Notre Dame, the famous hockey school, is there. And I'll tell you, I know how sad it is to see population decline lead to the loss of services and all the rest. So those two guys, they make a very strong case, and they don't win on everything, but they sure fight hard for the region.
Yeah, definitely, and that's all you can ask for in terms of MLAs. And I know, on the partisan side of things, we've seen at some points that the NDP regularly calls for Jason Kenney needs to get his MLAs in line. But at the same time, while some of them may have it, I mean, at the end of the day, you're just encouraging a debate among them, and really MLAs like Barnes and even to an extent Todd Loewen are just honestly, all they're doing is expressing what their constituents are saying, and if they weren't doing that, would they be doing their jobs even?
Yeah, there was a ridiculous story out of Calgary about 3-4 weeks back saying that I had imposed a gag order on my caucus. I laughed out loud when I saw that. This is the least, this is the most open space for MLAs to speak their minds and represent their constituents of any caucus or government I've seen. And I've been in elected positions now for 20-some years. Look, I do think that, and I say this to our team, that we have to operate as a team. When you're on a hockey team, not anybody just gets to jump on the ice at any time for any reason. You've got to be coordinated. I call it air traffic control when you're dealing with big issues and messages and such. And I always encourage our folks, if they're going to speak out, that's in a way that might be constructively critical of a government policy, to do so within reason and not to emulate the hysterical voices in the NDP, for example. But within those reasonable bounds, we have huge latitude for members to speak their minds, represent their constituents. The most powerful way people do so is in the confidentiality of the caucus room. And that's where we get together and really transact a lot of business. Todd is the chair of the Alberta caucus, so he kind of coordinates that process. And Dan's working on a lot of important special projects. So, you know, I think we've got just about the right balance. I find it hilarious. The very first questions that NDP leader Notley posed to me in the winter spring session of the legislature this week was, why don't I fire members of my caucus who she disagrees with because they speak out, because they may have a slightly different view on some of the public health restrictions? And I stood up. I said, Mr. Speaker, because we're a democracy. And I just sat down.
Yeah, fair enough, and well said. Also as well, I think maybe in that same time when I believe it was the issue of a certain member pointed to an education board, and then I think you had mentioned outward at some point that no, everybody who disagrees or with the NDP or doesn't agree is a racist, and then I believe there was one member that may have shouted, yeah, just like you, implying that you were a racist, and I think you had a very interesting defense for that, and I'm not asking you whether you're that. I think that's pretty clear with your support for the Jewish community that you're not, but your thoughts on that.
I just, you know, I have to say, we have tried, I won't say we're perfect, we're not angels, but we really tried hard to raise the bar on just mature conduct, on what I call civility in the legislature. I think people expect that. They don't want it to be a playground of insults and you know, people screaming at each other. Sure, tempers will flare, and it's a place where we're supposed to disagree. All that's good. But, you know, you got to treat people with a modicum of a little bit of respect, eh? And, you know, I just get this kind of stuff from the NDP all the time. They go to 10 out of 10 with the most outrageous kinds of insults. And you're right. I this week, one of the MLAs, a former Minister of Education, David Egan, heckled that I was a racist. I pointed out, look, I was the Canadian Immigration Minister who welcomed 1.3 million newcomers over a few years, mainly visible and minority Canadians. And I pointed out, by the way, I said, Mr. Speaker, the member who's saying that has called for Alberta to boycott Israel, the only Jewish country in the world. So I'm not about to take any lessons from tolerance on him. Anyway, it's the kind of stuff we put up with all the time.
Yeah, fair enough. Also as well, I guess, in terms of this, I know that there's sometimes, so I guess maybe a little bit of the last two questions will be a little bit of fact and fiction here. So fact or fiction, Alberta is going to have a diverse energy mix going forward that's going to be led by oil and gas. Fact or fiction?
Fact.
Okay, great. Awesome in that too. And as well, we've heard this thing, heard you talk about as well this time when this great reset. Now, I'm going to tell you, I guess to add a little bit of humor to it, when I used to have my 8-bit Nintendo system, the great reset was blowing as hard as I could in where you put in the cartridge to make sure all the dust was gone so I could make sure the game works. Because, I mean, like, and sometimes you'd really have to go in there a few extra times to get all the dust out so I could play whatever old school Mario game I wanted to. That, to me, was the great reset, but I hear that there's another great reset. So I guess the question to you, Mr. Premier, is we've heard about this from Professor Schwab. So I guess two things. There's people that have kind of linked you to the great resets. And what is this great reset? Tell us about this.
Great Reset is a book written by a guy named Klaus Schwab, who's an elitist socialist from Switzerland. He heads the Davos Summit, and which gathers billionaires and Hollywood celebrities every February, to tell the, basically, it's turned into I call it the rankest exercise in hypocrisy in the world, where they fly in on their private jets and basically tell everyone else that they should, stop using oil and gas and fuel and energy. And they lecture. They are green left elitists who lecture the rest of the world for living normal lives, or people in the developing world for wanting to get out of energy poverty. That's how I see it. So he's written a book saying that we should use the COVID crisis in order to bring in basically green left socialism and massively increase taxes and make it punitive for people to fill up their gas tanks or heat their homes or drive to work. So it's a hard left green agenda that he wants to use the pandemic to advance. And I have denounced this, but unfortunately, Kenny, there are some people who have imagined that it's not just a plan to advance socialism, but rather that Schwab and people like him somehow created the pandemic. And the pandemic is either fake and all the governments in the world are conspiring to lie to their publics about the virus, or that the virus was created in some, by some globalist conspiracy. But look, I just think both of those things are patently ridiculous. If you only knew how governments work, there's no way you could possibly imagine that every government in the world could perfectly execute the biggest con job in history. So in other words, COVID-19 is real. It has cost a lot of lives. It would have cost a lot more without public health measures. It's not fake. It's not the virus is not a conspiracy, but the Great Reset is a political project to exploit it, and I find that really offensive. Does that make the distinction make sense to you, Ken?
Yeah, it does. It does. It does. It does. It's very different from my game reset back in the day with the Nintendo bit, and it sounds a lot more complicated. But that's a very interesting thing, and I know that even sometimes some people would occasionally mention that it was a world conspiracy. But I guess when you say that, yeah, all worlds together, something tells me that the governments of Syria and Israel are not collaborating on this. But that's just my guess.
I was just pointing to people. This is we're all sick and tired of this, and none of us like it. But it is real. We've lost 2,000 people to it in Alberta this year. We would have lost lots more had we not taken some precautions. In many U.S. states had a death rate 5 times higher than ours, and I don't think Albertans would have accepted 10,000 people dying from this thing. If you don't think it's real, talk to the ICU nurses, talk to the anesthesiologists and the respiratory therapists who in November or December or January were dealing with unprecedented numbers piling up in their ICUs. Have there been people exaggerating the fears and wanting to lock us down hard the whole year long? Yes, including the Alberta NDP. In Ontario and Quebec, the schools are still shut. The churches are padlocked. There's a curfew in Quebec. There's a stay at home.
Yeah, Dad can't go out in Montreal.
There you go. There's a stay at home order in much of Ontario. We've never had those policies here in Alberta. We try to take a balanced approach.
Okay, that's great. And I guess my final question for you, Premier, and not even so much as Premier, but I guess from one human being to another, remember we asked you last time when you were on here, as Jason, how are you feeling these days as, you know, physically, mentally? You're checking in on the entire province, but not really well, many people ask you how you're feeling. So how are you feeling these days, mentally, physically, how are you holding up?
Well, I appreciate that. You know, there have been moments in the past year which were hard, for sure, and, that were hard to get through, but that's true for everyone. I mean, I guess there's probably more pressure on me in some ways, obviously, because of the nature of the job. And some days, just so much bad news was coming at us, you know, from the pandemic and the energy price collapse and the recession and everything. And there were a couple days there about 11 months ago when I wondered, you know, how are we going to get through this? But we have gotten through it. We've gotten through it because we're Alberta strong. We are resilient people. We are generous. People have looked after their neighbors, and I've just been inspired by all of that. So I'll tell you how I'm feeling right now. I got to lose my own COVID-19, the 20 pounds I put on. But
yep,
apart from that, I'm actually feeling better, more optimistic. I'm not BSing you. I really do feel just mentally and kind of emotionally more positive than I have for the past year, because I really, you know, spring is coming, you can feel it in the weather, the vaccines are being administered, we've got more and more of the vulnerable protected, there's lots of great signs for explosive economic growth later this year, and I'm excited, I believe we're going to look back about a year from now and say, Alberta is back, so God knows I'm ready to get this COVID thing behind us and move on with building this province. I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, and we're definitely looking forward to that. Mr. Premier, thank you so much for joining us today on the Hot Seat.
Really appreciate it. Thank you, Ken.